At the end of the day, what would I have wanted to get done today?
I'd like to welcome Adam Lieb to the Productivityist podcast. Adam, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So we just killed video because we're on Zoom, and we were just talking about how Zoom, with everyone using Zoom these days, or more and more people, you know, the idea of it you know, kind of can warble and things like that. We want to avoid any kind of distractions that can happen during our conversation. And I want you, because a lot of people may not know that are listening to this podcast, who is Adam and what's your deal? Can you share a little bit with the listener about who you are and what's your fascination with design? Because I looked at your website, like your specific website, and you've got a lot, you take on a lot of projects, some very interesting ones too, but let's talk about a little bit about you and what brought you to the work you're doing now with Astro House.
Yeah, it's a long story. I'll try to keep it interesting, but so I'm Adam Lieb. I'm one of the co-founders and current CEO of Astro House. We make the FreeWrite line of distraction-free writing tools. We created the original FreeWrite product all the way back in 2014 under the name HemingWrite, and subsequently released it under the FreeWrite brand in 2016 and started shipping it since then. And so, yes, in 2018, we launched our follow-on product called the FreeWrite Traveler, which is just about to start shipping, which is something we're super excited about. We've been spending the last 2 years, nose to the grindstone, really trying to get this product out and make it as best as good as it possibly can be. And so, yeah, I mean, that's sort of where I am now. Prior to that, I've always been fascinated with design. Product design sort of is where I fell in, found my sort of the confluence of mechanical engineering, which is what I studied, and sort of my own passions, around just design in general. And so I found myself being able to apply those different focus areas into product design. And that's where both the original FreeWrite and now the FreeWrite Traveler have been created.
So I've looked at the FreeWrite line before, and actually just before we jumped on the call, I told you I actually saw one in the wild when I didn't expect to see one. It was when I was in New York City and someone that was working on it at a cafe, and I had a chance to play with it. And it was just, there's something about it that I really just, I leaned into, and, you know, I already had a strong sense that it was designed with my sensibilities in mind, and the fact that it sets boundaries in terms of not just what you can do with it, but what you can't, which helps you do what you're supposed to do with it. So I'd love to hear like your thoughts on constraints and boundaries that you've encountered and or maybe even embraced in your work, and more particularly with the inspiration and creation of this product.
Yeah, with FreeWrite, it's really a pure manifestation of human-centered design principles, or a user experience design, because it really truly is both a combination of the features that are in it and the features that are purposefully withheld. And so it was an interesting project. I mean, that's really how it started. It wasn't like we created this product that we thought was going to take over the world and change, writers' lives forever and all these different things and be a statement on our ability or our inability to withhold ourselves from distractions and, how it fits in with society and all these things. It was really just, how do we come up with a tool that can help the writer stay focused? And so with that goal in mind, we sort of started crafting, what the product actually came to be. And so we thought about, okay, well, what's not important to the creative writing process? Distraction. So social media, a browser, Facebook, notifications, anything that pulls you out of the creative writing process. But we even took a few steps further. Do you need to have formatting? Do you need to have, an ability to do spell check? Does that actually help you in the creative writing process? And our opinion was, well, let's be extreme and just say no for now and see what happens. And then likewise, well, what really does get you into the flow state? So we already said no more distractions, but also, how do we sort of allow the writer to enjoy the process as much as possible? So we were really, you know, into mechanical keyboards. Mechanical keyboards have now seen a huge boom. Mm-hmm. What was once, you know, really set into the gamer market and programmer market now is you can all kinds of people are using mechanical keyboards again. And so we put that in there. An e-ink screen. I absolutely love the Kindle and what that actually brought to reading. And so I said, well, why can't we bring that same sort of glare free, high contrast, super paper-like experience and put that into a writing product. And so that's sort of how we started putting these features in and also taking some features out to make it just this super, super focused writing tool.
And that's, you know, that's one of the things that I found appealing right away was the constraints that were there purposefully, that you know, there was a lot of thought and process. And one of the things that I got to say that when I use my iPad to write a lot. And, you know, as someone who was traveling more, I'm not traveling as much now I'm imagining as people are listening to this, not a lot of people are traveling, but at least as with what's going on in the world right now. I bought an iPad because it was just easier for me to travel with as opposed to a laptop. I've got a desktop at home. But one of the things that drove me nuts about the iPad experience as a writer was the glare of the screen.
Right, right.
I mean, when it's a beautiful day, it's not like you can go outside and start writing with it because, you know, the sun just mounts. Same thing with reading, to be honest, which is why I love reading paper books and honestly why I like using paper a lot. But with the iPad, it was very much a distraction-free environment based on software. So why do you think that distraction-free software work? Like, why doesn't that work on its own? Like, what was one of the, cause there's a lot of people who say, well, there's a lot of distraction free writing software. And I'll speak from my own experience, particularly for Mac and iOS users. Why do you feel that those products on their own don't solve or at least mitigate some of the problems with distraction and diversion?
People know that they can get out of them.
Yeah.
I mean, simply, and it's funny because, you know, when people first see the free write, the original free write, they usually think, oh, you know, here are these guys that tried to, you know, reinvent the typewriter. And actually, it was sort of the opposite. This whole idea started from distraction-free software. Mm. And so my co-founder and I, during our initial conversation, he was telling me about this distraction-free software that he used that disabled the backspace key. And I thought that was super weird and unusual and intriguing. And so that actually led us into a whole conversation about why would that even exist? Mm-hmm. And, you know, what he found that was beneficial was that it separated him from his sort of critical mind. And so there's also part of the product that really fits within the specific writing methodology, which is to draft from top to bottom and edit later on your computer.
Right.
And so, you know, with the free write, we took that to heart and actually made it so that there are no arrow keys. You can backspace, but that's the only amount of editing that you can actually do on the free write. Now with the Traveler, we actually did add back arrow keys, and it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, sort of what that opens up in terms of writing styles and writing abilities. But the thing that's hard about it for people is that, you know, obviously that's a really, it seems sort of draconian, but it actually does work. And so even myself, I have to, when I start using the free write, every time I pick it up, it's sort of, I have like a, I don't know, 30 seconds to a minute where I sort of have this like mental jump I need to make. And I go from, you know, like, oh, I want to fix that to, oh, I'm just going to keep writing.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it's like, I have 500 words. Whereas when I try to do that in Word or another document, you know, another editor, there's this constant pull to edit. And I think, you know, getting back to your original question, I think what people don't realize is how much energy that we use just to resist urges. Mm-hmm. So even though there's distraction-free software, and actually I think distraction-free software does get you a lot of the way, but what it doesn't do is that you still know in the back of your head that you can close that software, you can restart your computer, you can get out of it, you can, you know, go on Reddit just to, you know, quote unquote, research something. And so, you know, there's always that little, you know, voice in the back of your head saying like, you can just get out of it, or it's been long enough. And I think, you know, there is a real release that happens when you use a dedicated device.
Not only that, but there's the biases of, oh my God, I have to turn off all notifications. And how do I do that? No, like, it's just the barriers are far greater than just being able to, you know, take one device, that this is the job of that device, and leave all that other resistance behind. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And that was part of the design, you know, philosophy from the very beginning, like nothing to open, nothing to close. Like, you turn it on and it's ready to write as soon as possible. And even that was part of our user flow, where when you turn it on, it doesn't ask you to log in or anything. You actually start in an anonymous session, and then you can later log in and sync those documents to your account. And so even just that choice is intended to allow the writer to just sit down and start writing as quickly as possible.
Are you more of a one device to rule all tasks, or a this device does this one thing really well sort of person across the board? Like, in other words, clearly with the FreeWrite and the FreeWrite Traveler, you know, which basically, for, you know, it's a smaller laptop, really, like to a degree, if we want to simplify it to that does this one thing really, really well. Are you like that across the board, or are you more of a, it depends on the scenarios?
I think I'm getting there. I think as I've gotten older and as I've come to appreciate design more and more, I think you start to realize sort of the trade-offs that designers have made in the products that have multiple uses. And so it's, you know, I sort of equate it to, like, you know, knives in the kitchen. Yeah, you can just have a chef's knife and do a lot. But then once you start getting comfortable with a paring knife or some kind of other specialized knife, you know, there's something really sort of magical about that experience. And, you know, that translates to a lot of different things. I definitely find myself looking for specialized tools more and more.
Right.
And it just, I think you get more joy out of using those products.
The one thing I can say when I'm looking at the FreeWrite and the Traveler, especially, and what's interesting, I said, not many people are traveling right now, but that's not entirely true. I mean, people are traveling, but they're also leaving the house. I'm work from home. I have my office here, but what were some of the design sensibilities that went into the Traveler that you have either refined or decided to put in that were, you felt needed to be there for the writer that wants to really have a lot of joy when working with this particular device?
When we started thinking about the industrial design for the Traveler, I think there were a few requirements. You know, one of them is that it needed to be much more portable. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, interestingly, we've had a lot of people since the Traveler design has come out say, you know, I still prefer FreeWrite. And that's, you know, totally fine, which is why we're keeping both of them as our current product line. But I think we wanted something that very portable, you know, with the idea of, like, I can take this when I travel. In the same way that, you know, I was on a plane 100,000 miles a year, I didn't want to, you know, take a FreeWrite with me all the time. But I did want to take something where I could write down my notes, where I could do my journaling. And so something that was super portable was very important. I think with the overall aesthetic, you know, we wanted something that matched our brand, which is sort of this, you know, retrofuturism. Mm-hmm. It's hard to really define sort of an era of where it exists, but that's sort of the best thing that I can kind of call it. So we wanted something to reflect our brand. We wanted something that, you know, was elegant and beautiful in that way. And also something that was sort of maybe fit within what people expected sort of a modern writing tool would look like a little bit more. I think what I mean by that is, you know, when people see the FreeWrite, similar to how you saw it, you know, if, funny enough, is that when people have told us that when they write in a coffee shop, like, they're distracted all the time because people are constantly coming up to them and asking them what that is. And so, you know, that was obviously not an intended consequence.
There's an irony there for sure. And
I think there is. And so, you know, I think we were successful early on because of that provocative design and, you know, obviously, you know, I love it. And I think it's fantastic. And other people really like it too. But I think, you know, we wanted to make something that would maybe slip into the modern day, you know, consumer culture a little bit better, while also still kind of retaining those brand notes that we, you know, created with FreeWrite.
So, you know, the reason that I am fascinated with the Traveler and the FreeWrite, both of them, the Traveler to me is the one that when I saw it, I'm like, ah, because it does, it does emote something a little bit different for me in terms of, and not just me, but I think people will look at it. And I mean, if you go to the page, which we'll link to, of course, in the show notes, I mean, it's just people look at it and go, what is that thing? Right. Like even when it's closed, like what is that thing? And then the delight of, you know, opening and all that stuff. But I think as a writer and someone who's been working on a book and that's one of my primary, I mean, I do other things. Obviously I host this podcast. I have some other things that I do, but the core of everything I do starts with the written word. So I'm a writer and I know it's geared. I mean, that's clearly who it's geared towards, but I can also see this and I want to get your thoughts on this is, you know, if you're in a meeting, you know, you're in an office meeting and again, that idea of bringing your laptop or your tablet or your phone into the meeting to take notes, this to me, I mean, yes, it might seem like overkill maybe for someone, but there's lots of other use cases that I can think of where for productivity's sake, if we're going to go down that bent, that you know, using the free write and specifically maybe the traveler makes a lot of sense. Do you have other like bits of feedback and thoughts on that as well? Like, because I don't think it's just, I mean, I think it's geared towards the writer or someone who is going to spend a lot of time writing, but I can see some other areas as well where this can fit in.
Yeah, I hope so. I think that sort of remains to be seen. I mean, I remember we got a photo from, I think, a doctor in South America. I can't remember what specific country. I think it was either Chile or Argentina, but they were writing notes on the free write in an operating room. And we're like, oh my God, I don't know if that's the right thing to do, but it was sort of, I mean, it was very cool and very clear, like, you know, people are taking these products to wherever they feel inspired and wherever they, you know, want to write. And I think, you know, that is also part of the, you know, that was part of the whole thing. And so with Traveler, you know, the product is, you know, about a pound and a half. So it's a completely different sort of level of portability than with FreeWrite. And, you know, I'm super excited to see what people end up using with it for.
So for those that are not 100% sure of like, where does this stuff go? Because some people will look at the device and go, well, where, okay, so you're writing here, but where can I send it? Where does it go? And I'm interested in talking about this workflow because as someone who's, you know, going to be playing with it and checking it out, I want to see like what is the path of least resistance, right? From the writing to where I need it to be so that it can be refined. So can you kind of go over that a little bit? Because I think, I don't know that people are going to be 100% clear on it while listening to this. Yes, if you go to, you know, getfreewrite.com, you go to the links that we have, you're going to see it. But can you talk a little bit about the workflow there?
Yeah, definitely. And they're really both very similar, if not the same. The idea was that we're not trying to take out people's current devices. What we are trying to do is sort of provide a tool that was specific and ideal for the drafting part of the writing process. And so, you know, with that in mind, we wanted to make it as easy as possible to sort of go from drafting to editing. And so the way that we sort of thought about that was, okay, you know, we have this great thing called the cloud now. Like, why don't we just sync up our documents from the device directly into the cloud? And so that you can swivel from your traveler directly to your desktop and open that same exact file in Dropbox. And so that's really how it works. You do have an account with Postbox, which is our sort of internal cloud service, but really all Postbox does is sort of keeping an archive of your documents and also shuttling your documents from the devices to one of three cloud providers. So we currently sync with Evernote, Google Drive, and Dropbox. And so, you know, you have to, you know, create accounts. I think all of them have free accounts. Most writers are using one of those three, if not all three now.
Yep.
But yeah, again, like once you set it up once, it's, you know, synced to our service and everything that you write on FreeWrite or Traveler is then seamlessly synced in the background to a folder on Google Drive or Dropbox or Evernote.
Okay, it's time to take a break from the conversation to talk about the sponsors of this episode. First off, let's start with taking back your time. And you can do that with the power of Text Expander. I've been using Text Expander for years, and it is an indispensable part of my productivity and time management toolkit. Repetitive typing, little mistakes, searching for your answers, they are all taking precious time away from you and your team. With Text Expander, you can take it back. The latest version of Text Expander even has new and improved statistics reporting for organizations, including the ability to build reports with customizable date ranges for enterprise and individuals, so you can track how much time your team saves. And that's massively important because when you're working either inside of an office or remotely, it's really great to have a sense of what's going on and how much time you're saving. And you can do a lot of that with Text Expander. In fact, with Text Expander, you can keep your team consistent, accurate, and current. You can share your text and images with the whole staff to keep them on track, so everyone will share the same message and give the same answers to all customer questions. You can work faster and smarter, your whole team can. And you can use Text Expander's powerful shortcuts and abbreviations to streamline and speed up everything you type. You can create powerful snippets to save you time so that all you really need to do is type a short abbreviation and Text Expander does the rest of the typing for you. You can keep your whole team communicating efficiently and with consistent language. Share your snippets of messaging, signatures, and descriptions with everyone on your team and for those that work on projects with you. Really, it's a no-brainer. You gotta get Text Expander, and you can do that with a 20% discount off your first year when you visit textexpander.com/podcast. Now, Text Expander is available on Mac, Windows, Chrome, iPhone, and iPad, so you can use it pretty much anywhere, and you should. So head to textexpander.com/podcast, choose Productivity as Podcast from the drop-down window, and get 20% off your first year. Do it today. I gotta be honest with you. When I woke up this morning, I was feeling kind of overwhelmed. You know, I almost felt like I didn't really want to accomplish anything today. In some instances, when it comes to just all the anxiety that's going on, not just in the world today, but just the uncertainty that surrounds the world on an ongoing basis, you need someone to talk to sometimes. You need to get help, and you can do that with BetterHelp. So if something's preventing you from achieving your goals, like, for example, something as simple as maybe recording this ad or working on a book or just doing the things that you normally would do on an everyday basis, BetterHelp will help you out. They'll assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. They did that for me. You can start communicating in under 24 hours. In fact, I did that this morning with my own therapist. I did that right at the start of the day because I could just feel the fog there. And BetterHelp has made it so simple, so easy. Now, remember, this is not self-help. It's professional counseling, and you can have access to it all without ever having to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room. You can do it from the comfort of your own home, and you'll get timely and thoughtful responses from your therapist. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. I had to do that. It was seamless. It's also more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. Now, there are licensed professional counselors who are specialized in a wide range of areas, including depression, anxiety, stress, sleeping, LGBT matters, family conflicts, anger, grief, self-esteem, and anything that you share is confidential. BetterHelp is convenient, BetterHelp is professional, and BetterHelp is affordable. You should check out the testimonials posted daily on their site. And the thing about BetterHelp is it's doing so well and it's making such an impact. So many people have been using BetterHelp, myself included, that they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. I want you to start living a happier life today. I want you to be able to connect with someone when you need to right away. As a listener of the Productivityist podcast, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/timecrafting. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/timecrafting. Do yourself a favor. Check out what BetterHelp can offer you today. I've got some big news I want to share with you today. The Now Year calendar, my partnership with the team at New Year, is now available. The 2021 edition is now available for purchase. It's a wall calendar that comes in both a tall and wide format, so both portrait and landscape, and it espouses and helps you plan out the year based on my time crafting methodology. So you can put your monthly themes in there. You could put your daily themes there. You could use your annual axiom, the one that you've chosen. If you followed my 30 days of time crafting program, you can choose your annual axiom and put it at the top of this calendar so you can see it every single day, along with those monthly themes, along with those daily themes. Plus, there is a little box in the corner that we've divided actually for the first time in this edition of the calendar. And what it does is allows you to track one habit or one streak that you're doing, or maybe you want to track two. And what I've used this for is for my monthly theme is that the top half, so the top triangle, or the top division, I'm using for tracking how well I'm doing with my monthly theme. Did I live up to my monthly theme on that given day? And then also I use the bottom for any other kind of tracking I'm doing, so journaling or anything like that. If you're doing both a personal and professional theme for the month, which I talk about in Time Crafting, you can use that little lower box to track both of those. There are a wide variety of ways that you can use the Now Year Wall calendar, and I want you to get your hands on this calendar today. Just go to productivityist.com/newyear, that's N-E-U-Y-E-A-R, and you'll be able to connect with the store that will allow you to purchase the Now Year Wall calendar today. Now, 2020 is rapidly coming to a close, so you wanna start planning the next year now, and the Now Year calendar can help you do that. So again, visit productivityist.com/newyear, that's N-E-U-Y-E-A-R, today, and grab your Now Year Wall calendar now. And now, let's get back to my conversation with Adam Leib. You're on the Productivityist podcast. All right, I want to shift gears a little bit for a second, because I think this is going to go back to the story about why you do what you do. Because if you go to, I'm going to link to your website as well, because there's lots of cool things that you,
oh gosh,
that you, but I'm looking at some of the projects, man. And I mean, yes, the Traveler's there, the Freeway, there's a lot of, but I mean, I've seen things like the Punisher Yo-Yo, and I mean, there's a lot of interesting design stuff here. And one of the things that I, so let's talk about that really quickly. Like, this sure. is not like, the building of the Hemingwright, which became the Freeright. Now we're talking about the Freeright Traveler, but there's been a journey here. Have you always been someone that's like, I want to make stuff, and I want to make stuff that's kind of unique and interesting and gets people talking?
Yeah, I guess I don't, you know,
or is that just a byproduct of you making the stuff? And it's like, oh, people talk, like, cause I'm looking at this like a video confessional booth, yeah. A Segway accessory. Like all these little interesting things that it's very Renaissance to a degree. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's a byproduct. I mean, I think that sort of desire has sort of, it's grown over the years. You know, when I was in high school building things, or even middle school, you know, as a kid, I think I just wanted to make stuff. I didn't really think about, and probably purposefully really didn't want to share it with people, because I think I just didn't want any feedback, to be honest. And, you know, then as I think as I sort of found, my interest in product design as it relates, you know, to creating consumer products, I think in those, like, I do actually think of our products and my products that I've created as art. And I've tried to sort of relay that to my team as well, because, you know, I think it's hard sometimes, I think, in the modern consumer marketplace to really think of your products with any kind of values. Mm. And I do try to do that. I don't know. I mean, I try to do that. And I think this is sort of an evolving concept within my own mind, is like, you know, how do I kind of create more art? How do I, you know, put those messages out there farther? I think, you know, there's definitely some statement here about, you know, the power of, you know, taking hold of your own sort of attention, right? Like how do you manage your own levels of distraction? And I think like that's certainly something that's coming from me internally. But there's, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think that there's a lot of other products that I have on this, you know, long list, growing list of things I want to create. I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, there's also a part of me that I sort of tell everyone that I just want to like become an artist in the woods one day and not make any products, because I really don't want any more feedback, but I do still want to keep creating things. So I don't know. It's sort of a balance between, you know, I think getting the benefit of actually, you know, influencing people by putting out, you know, artist products, and also, you know, just enjoying making things.
So that leads nicely to the idea of risk, because you look at your bio, page, which it's got a picture of Michael Scott. And this is a classic Office moment where he's got, you know, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take by Wayne Gretzky. And then Michael Scott is quoting that quote. And that talks about risk. Like, you know, if you don't take shots, then you're not going to score. Right. So that seems to me, as soon as I saw it, like, okay, there's a lot, like you seem to be someone who is willing to take chances. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, I don't.
That didn't sound definitive.
There's this whole concept of like, you know, is entrepreneurship risky? And, you know, I've probably listened to a lot of the same podcasts or read the same books that you have. And it's like, I think when you talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, it's not that they're always so risky. I think they just see risk differently.
Right.
You know, and I probably fall into that, you know, mindset as well. Like to, you know, maybe non-entrepreneurs, I seem extremely risky. You know, I left a, you know, well-paying, you know, corporate finance investment banking job in New York and had nothing, you know, literally had nothing to do. And that was great by my standards. Mm-hmm. But some people, you know, all my friends on the floor, you know, that I worked with were like, are you sure, dude? Like, are you sure? But, you know, I think like, I don't know, in my head, like I want to take more risks. Right. I'm always pushing myself to sort of find like, where do I feel like comfortable and think like, you know, is that really important? Maybe there's something that I should be pushing on there. So I don't know. It's sort of a tricky question.
There's another Wayne Gretzky quote, which I think is particularly interesting considering we've talked a lot about free write and the free write, traveler in particular. There's a quote that his dad passed on to him, like, I skate to where the puck is going to be, not where it has been. And when I look at the products, the free write products, the line of products, that seems to me that product is kind of falling into that line of thinking as well. Like, you know, you're kind of getting ahead of the curve a little bit with this sort of thing, at least in terms of hardware. I could tell you right now by looking at my writing setup, I have my iPad Pro and then I have a clickety clackety keyboard because there's a tactile feel to it. And then I have a stand for it. And then when I look at the traveler, I'm like, man, I just need to have this thing. So are you in that adage of like, you try to look ahead to say, okay, this is where I think the puck is going and head in that direction. Maybe even in particular with the traveler. Is that something that you either kept in mind intentionally, or it's just, again, kind of something that's happened by osmosis, for lack of a better term?
I think there's a concept in product design that I've sort of had to learn the hard way, which is, you know, you sort of have to be on trend, but not, you know, you can be a little behind trend, but to me, that's not that exciting. Mm. You can be a little ahead of trend, but if you can't be too far ahead, because if you're too far ahead, basically you're just going to have to fund the time it takes for everyone else to catch up. And so I think, you know, with Freeride and Traveler, again, like I don't think I had any like real premonition that they were going to be some super successful product. And I think even, you know, by most, you know, consumer electronics standpoints, like we're still really small. I mean, we're like a boutique, you know, consumer electronics company. But I think, you know, as we grow, like I'm definitely trying to think of, you know, as I'm thinking of ideas, trying to think of them like where they fall on this curve. And I think, you know, I definitely like to be a little bit ahead of the curve, but not too far out, and definitely, you know, not trying to play catch up or like, you know, play me too with everybody else. Cause I think that's just, you know, boring and kind of lame. So
you're dancing, you know, the line basically.
Yeah. I think that's what I try to do, but it's, mm-hmm. I mean, that's as hard as anything in coming up with a product. So, you know, that level of timing is very difficult. And, you know, ultimately I think probably the most difficult thing with coming up with, you know, a good product idea.
A couple more questions before I let you go. Number one is when you guys were putting together the free write campaigns, both been crowdsourced and crowdfunded, not crowdsourced, but crowdfunded. What was it like what was that feeling like the whole process of, okay, we're going to put this out there, because you're kind of putting it out into the world going, here's an idea and please pay for it. And then you'll get, because a lot of people look at like Kickstarter, Indiegogo as, I mean, unfortunately, stores to some degree, right? Like I'm going to give you money and then you're going to, And I've had several campaigns not come to fruition. I mean, the first campaign I ever backed on Kickstarter, I'm still waiting for the bathroom speaker wall dock, which I never got. and that was like a long time ago.
Yeah.
So there's got to be that sense of what expectation, but also anticipation. Like when I was talking to, on an upcoming interview, I was talking to Kara Golden, CEO of Hint, about when she first, like when the water first hit the market and what it was like when she got her first order sold. What was it like for you when you was like, oh, this thing's a thing now, like it's happening? Like, what was that feeling like and how have you carried that over to like on an ongoing basis? Because I think you have to keep that momentum going, right?
Yeah. And I could, you know, I could probably talk for several hours on what it's like to run crowdfunding campaigns, both winning and losing and in the middle. You know, our two crowdfunding campaigns, the first one for FreeRay, which was December 10th, 2014, we did it with, you know, literally zero budget. And we completely relied on an email list that we had built over the prior couple months through simply capturing emails off of a super simple WordPress page that had traffic sent to it from some viral press that we happened to get. And that was the formula. We did a couple very important things right. You know, the first one being creating something that was super provocative and interesting to people. And, you know, I think we got a little bit lucky in that we catered to writers, which is, you know, never something that you hear in any, you know, business book, but if you want to get people to write about you, you can make a product for writers. Mm-hmm. And then we, you know, we had this, I think eight or 9,000 person email list. And that's really what we went to Kickstarter with. We made a $500 video that we, you know, hired a friend to do, and that was it. And so it was very crazy. It was super crazy because we had no idea. And the biggest thing was that we had never told anyone or said anything about what the price was going to be. And we were very scared.
I think because writers aren't notoriously flush with cash.
Yes. So I've heard. we were super nervous. And, you know, because this is a brand new thing. Like, what do you compare it to? And not only that, but like, does it even matter? I mean, it has a really unique set of components. You know, this is our first, you know, consumer electronic that we would potentially manufacture. I mean, we had only a prototype at the time. So, you know, we try to do as much research as we can, like, you know, how much does the screen cost? How much would a keyboard cost? How much would it cost to like put together and some, you know, but, you know, these were pretty rough calculations. And without any experience, I mean, it was tough. And so I think we went out with, I think our early, super early bird price was something like $349. Mm. And we were so scared to put that out. And it's funny because, you know, now we're selling FreeRight for $549 and we've sold some special editions for up to $700. And, you know, those are big jumps. And, you know, nobody really talks about, I mean, of course, there's always people that wish it was cheaper, but like, people understand now that we've delivered on the experience, like people understand now that it's worth it and it's valuable.
You've got devotees, you've got people like, I'm a big fan of Baron Fig's products, like their notebooks, their pens. Mm-hmm. My wife shudders every time I like buy a new pen. She goes, why is that pen $60? Like, can't you just use a regular pen? I'm like, no, I can't. I love what they make and they're high quality. And I bought Studio Neat. They're another great crowdfunding success story with things like the Neat ice maker and pens and all that stuff. And they just make really cool things. And I bought my wife's looking at the credit. Why did you need to buy a pen from this? Don't you have pens from Baron Fig? I'm like, yeah, but I don't have a clicky pen. And I know they make good stuff. She's like, oh my God. Like, I'm definitely one of those people that look at a product and if it's well built and there's a reputation that precedes itself with the company. Cause that's another thing I think too, that's happening more and more with crowdfunding. I mean, I had, and I'll link to this in the show notes, I had Jeff Sheldon from Ugmunk on the program before, and he's talked about his Gather, which I purchased, but also his Analog Productivity, which are basically for lack of a better term, you could simplify them and say they're index cards that have, you know, a simple productivity system. And he made, I think I want to, well, he made close to what, I mean, Traveler made what, 700 and almost just over over 700,000 on Indiegogo, right? 714. Yep. He made close to that on Kickstarter for what people would basically say, these are index cards. They're not, there's much more to it, but also he's got a reputation. Like Ugluk has a rep. So I think that plays a role too now, especially since Kickstarter and Indiegogo have been around for a while.
It makes a huge difference. I mean, it's reputation and it's also audience. Right. I think, you know, once you have a campaign or two and you have a store, I mean, you know, so, I was talking a little bit about our original campaign in December, right, 2014, you know, our Traveler campaign was at the extreme, but on the completely other side. So we worked with like a crowdfunding marketing agency. We put a lot of money behind it. We made a fancy video. You know, we prepped email lists. Like we had tons of marketing going. We had, you know, everything going. And aside from just aside from the amount of money that we raised on Indiegogo, we also sold a similar amount through our website. I mean, granted, it took a lot longer, mm-hmm. you know, the actual development process than we had liked, but, you know, that's a huge amount of product that we've now sold before the product even exists. And so, you know, as a reminder, the pressure's on, right?
Yeah. And that's the thing too, is I think a lot of people don't understand. That's why they get to a store. Well, where is this thing? Where it's not, I mean, I've seen reputable companies like Best Self who have made their Best Self planner. And then they had one they were working on that was an hourglass. I think it was called Tempo. And it just never, they couldn't get it to work the way they wanted it to work. So they abandoned the project. They did right by as best they could, I think, with a lot of the people that backed them. But there's no guarantee, and I think that that's something that people need to keep in mind. But again, like you said, it wasn't your first rodeo, so you had a chance to kind of set yourself up for the best success possible. And I mean, clearly it's happened.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the first one, yeah, I don't know. There's so much uncertainty in the product development process, especially for your first one. And, you know, not having any money, we had money we ended up getting money for the first one, not just from the Kickstarter, but elsewhere. But, you know, it's a very stressful process. And I think, you know, I always wonder, you know, I'm an engineer myself. I just can't even imagine what it's like to do it as a non-engineer. There's just so many places for it to go wrong.
Right.
It's just endless.
To me, yeah. Here's a question. I didn't expect to ask this one, but I'll throw this one in there as well. To me, I've had some people criticize this before, is the idea of, well, if you've already got a store, you've already got a business, why do you crowdfund? Like, can't you just make it and then not? So I've not talked to anybody about this before, but everyone that, like, I mean, I talked to Jeff Sheldon, I've talked to obviously Baron Fig, I've talked to, you know, other businesses that have, why is crowdfunding still something that you would do even when you've got like, okay, we have this business, we could just make this thing. What's the reasoning behind it? Cause I think some people need to hear this.
I mean, it's a great marketing channel. I mean, it's funny because I was part of the, I've got recently, which is funny, into 3D printing. You'd think I've been doing 3D printing for a long time. I actually got my first 3D printer over quarantine.
Wow.
So yeah. yeah. We could talk about prototyping processes for a while too, but yeah, I mean, you know, so Creality, which is, I don't know if you follow this at all, but Creality is one of the biggest 3D printer, you know, sort of consumer level 3D printer companies. And they just launched a huge, you know, crowdfunding campaign. And, you know, you know, there's a lot of complaints, like you said, you know, why are you doing this? And they raised something like $3 or $4 million. I think, you know, first of all, it doesn't bother me in any way from a consumer or as a producer, because, you know, in theory, as long as they're sort of genuine, like you're probably getting the product at the cheapest it's ever going to be.
Right.
And, you know, why not have companies that are legit putting out product on crowdfunding? I think what they get as a benefit is they get access to the community of people that are on Indiegogo or Kickstarter, which is huge, mm-hmm. honestly. And also, it's actually very cheap as a marketing, you know, outlet. I think, you know, they charge 5%.
And it's validation too. You get to validate things. Like you get to see, because there's been campaigns that have failed that you would think, oh, wow, this, and you're like, okay, well, I guess this idea, or you get a better sense, right? I think, like you said, it's as a marketing tool, both in terms of spreading the word, but also figuring out, you know, what people might want. It's very, very valid.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's another element, which is it creates sort of, you know, it forces the company to have sort of a complete product launch campaign, you know, with right. pricing, with delivery dates, with everything, you know, and it actually sort of, it's almost like the company's own tool to keep them on task, you know, because it could just go on forever. Or, and not only that, I think, you know, even for us, like we had a campaign that failed, you know, and I'm not too shy about it. I'm still sad about it, but we had a campaign that failed. And I think like we used crowdfunding with, you know, for its intended purpose, which is like, we thought we had this great idea. We put a lot of energy and money into it. And we put it on put it on Kickstarter, and, you know, apparently nobody cared.
What was that product again?
It was called ClapBoss.
Okay.
And, you know, it was very different from our FreeRide products. It was more of a gadget. And the idea was, well, I don't know if I want to pitch ClapBoss now.
No. But I mean, people can look into it if they want.
Yeah. They can. Absolutely. And, you know, I still love it. It was a great fun gadget. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, we put it out on Kickstarter and people, you know, just didn't make it. Nobody kind of cared either way. And so, you know, yeah, we could have spent the time and money to actually develop the product all the way. And maybe it would have even worked. I think it might have worked in retail, but I don't know. And so, you know, we put it out and nobody cared. And then, you know, that potentially saved us hundreds of thousands of dollars from, you know, in development costs that we didn't have to spend. And instead we shelved it and actually worked on Traveler instead.
Well, so, and what's interesting is that, as you said this, that there's this quote, what's the opposite of love? It's not hate, it's indifference. Right. So, you know, FreeRide, clearly the Traveler is loved, right? Whereas you know, when, you know, ClapBoss was, people were indifferent about. So that, I guess there's ebbs and flows to running a business no matter what, you know, and when you're, especially when you're making, but when you make a product that people love, and, or when there's, like I said, at the start of the episode, where I saw it in that New York hotel room cafe, and I'm like, oh, like I could see it in person and got to actually type on it and stuff like that. I'm like, this is something that is delightful. And I think that there's something to be said for that. And in terms of not just being a user of delightful tools, which I've talked about, but also someone who makes them. And it's you guys are making some really delightful stuff.
Thank you. Yeah. And you know, we're super excited about it. We also, I should say, you know, one of the things we talked about, you know, access and price a little bit. So we actually created an online distraction free, in quotes, I guess, you know, writing software called Sprinter. Mm. And so, you know, again, we wanted to try and give people a little bit of the experience of this quote unquote distraction free experience that we created, i.e. there's no arrow keys. Of course it's in your browser. So there's some of those, you know, distractions, but it also allows you to access sort of Postbox and the rest of our ecosystem. And so people can actually try that at sprinter.getfreeride.com for free.
Awesome. And I'll link to that in the show notes for sure. One more question before I let you go. I normally ask, like, what's one action someone can take to be more productive? If there's one simple action that they could take, but I want to ask you something a little bit different. What does productivity mean to you? Like, how do you define productivity?
So I think of productivity, I actually think of it sort of in reverse. Mm-hmm. I actually sort of have this sort of like mental game that I play, which is like at the end of the day, or actually during the day, I think at the end of the day, what would I have wanted to get done today? Which is kind of a strange way to approach it. Mm-hmm. But I don't think of it as like, how can you do the most possible things? But it's like, how do you actually just do the one most important thing? And I think like for that, like that's actually what's worked for me, is just constantly reprioritizing and focusing on the most important thing at all times. And that's still something that I, you know, really have to try to do. But to me, productivity is knowing how to prioritize and focusing on that one thing.
Adam, this has been a fantastic conversation. Where can people go to keep up with you and your work? And more importantly, where can people go to, because the Traveler is people are ready to pick it up, right? So where can people go to check that out as well?
Yeah, Mike, thanks so much for having me. So people can go to getfreeride.com/traveler with one L. And we're going to be shipping at the end of October, which is super exciting. So, you know, we have promotional pricing, 38% off of our retail price right now. And that's obviously going to change. So, you know, if you want to get it, then, you know, now's the time. So getfreewrite.com/traveler.
Adam, thanks again for joining me today on the Productivityist podcast.
Thank you so much.